Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have some amazing guests for you today. I always tell people I honestly do this for selfish reasons. I get to learn from the best of the best. I get to learn from the experts. Where else can you ask the people who know how they know what they know or how they do what they do? But I can here on the Roundtable Talk Show. And of course, you can too. If you have comments or questions, please feel free to add them to the comment section. And I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do. And that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. Your network, your friends, your family even need your help. They need your support. And they need you to go ahead and share this information. Maybe they want to start their own business. Maybe they've been in business for years. And maybe it's time for them to pivot. We don't know. But if you share this information, they'll be able to learn right along with you. And like I always say, friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going ahead and getting your friends online with us, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest, Miss Lisa Porter. Lisa owned and operated a company called Vacation Pet Friendly. It is a website dedicated to travelers that want to take their pets. It has all the pet-friendly hotels, beaches, restaurants, parks, etc. for every city in the United States. However, during the pandemic, travel has bottomed out. Fortunately, for years, she has been developing pet products that are 100% natural. When COVID broke out, she decided the time was right to turn this into a business. Good morning, Lisa. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you.
You are so welcome. You gave us your story right there. You were here. You were there. We're going to talk about the pandemic. We're going to talk about COVID. We're going to talk about how you pivoted, how you turned your business around. But I had never heard of such thing, like a whole website geared towards people who want to travel with their pets. And I think that's because I'm not a pet person. So you can go all these different places with your pets?
Yeah, I developed that website back in 2008. And the reason I did it was, again, the recession, because I've always had a PR marketing company. So I decided, you know, I was sitting on the patio one night and I thought, well, shoot, you know, I want people to be able to travel with pets, because when I traveled with mine, I always had to sneak them in. And so I thought, well, there's got to be a way that people can actually travel. And so I started building it out and building it out further to include, you know, not just where they can book hotels, but, you know, that are pet friendly, because it was a lot of research to find out which ones were, which ones weren't. And then we made it so that it had booking capabilities. Mm-hmm. And so you could go on this website and you could book a room at, you know, any of the hotels that were pet friendly. It would tell about their, you know, pet fees if they had them, et cetera. But so then I thought, well, you know, once people get to the hotel, where are they going to take their dog? I mean, where can they go to eat? Where can they take the dog to the beach? Where can they take the dog to, a park? And so I built it out so it has almost everything you can possibly think of. I got it to page one of Google. It actually used to be called Pet Hotels of America. I got it to page one of Google. And then when I rebranded it to Vacation Pet Friendly, I lost all my ranking. I had got in the LA Times four times as Pet Hotels of America, and AP considered me their travel expert for, you know, people that were traveling with cats. And so I built up the SEO, you know, the ranking, and then lost it all when I changed it over to Vacation Pet Friendly. So I kind of got mad at it and left it alone for a few years. And then, went back to PR. And then I realized, you know, I've been doing these pet products for so long. And I thought, you know, this recession is another good time to change. So I went ahead and built out Paw Purity, and that's what I've been doing since. So yeah, I mean, and the products are wonderful. They're 100% natural. There's no preservatives that could be harmful. And, you know, and the more research I did, the more I realized, you know, shampoos have formaldehyde, they have parabens, they have all these different things that soak into a dog's skin. And it's just disgusting. And same with especially flea and tick medications. My dogs used to hide when they heard me open it. For 20 minutes, I couldn't find them.
Well, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about that, but you going real fast for me, Lisa. It's Monday. I'm not, you know, totally awake yet. I want to go back to these vacations because your mind and pet lovers think completely different. Like my background is travel. I started out of high school with TWA, worked for American Express in the American Express Platinum Travel Department. So I understand people take their pets, but I'm the kind of person, my pet would just be in the room. I wouldn't be looking for a beach or anything like that for my pet.
It's changed. The whole industry's changed. I mean, they usually have even a separate floor for pets now in the hotels. And a lot of, as a PR company, you know, I represent a lot of builders and architects, and they're starting to put in, relief areas and things like that, because their pets are their family. And, yes. You know, people spend more money on their pets than they do on their kids. And so, they have to incorporate all this into real life experiences because, people want to take their pets. They don't want to have to leave them in a shelter at a veterinarian office to be put in a cage or at a pet resort, that costs $100 a night, just because they take.
They are part of our family.
On a walk every hour.
Yes. Now they're part of our families. I definitely see that. I definitely agree with that. Lisa, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead when we're talking about our families and growing our families, I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Marion Grace Boyd, founder of Grief Walk. She has 30 plus years experience as a psychotherapist, adoption practitioner, and grief counselor. She brings her formal training and experiences of grief together in order to co-create. Remember, it's okay. Marion is passionate about helping people find peace. Good morning, Marion. How are you?
I'm good. It's so nice to meet you, Sharifa. So nice to meet you, almost in person.
It is so nice to meet you as well. You have a certain glow to you. I love it. I love it.
Oh, thank you. It's the window in the background.
Is that what it is? You can't give away all your tricks.
My white hair. It's probably this white hair. But anyway, yes, it seems to glow.
I like it. I wanted to introduce you after Lisa because I read all the bios and somehow in my mind, I find like a kind of common theme. Yeah. And it's like one of the things that I've seen as far as pets and adoption is that more people use them in terms of grief. When you go out, you see the people on the planes and they have their pet, and it's been more and more pets that go out just to help people be able to make it through the day. Or maybe that's just my experience.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
And we just happen to be on you at this moment. It's life. Yeah. It's like how life happens.
My daughter-in-law, who is 6 months pregnant, all is well.
Good.
You're right. I was fascinated by Lisa's commentary on pets, because that's exactly what's happening nowadays. Our pets are becoming, and during COVID, there have been so many pets adopted through COVID because people are needing companions. They're needing a live being in the house. They're needing exercise. I've got two dogs myself. They are my exercise. And so as you mentioned, I do grief support work, and we've just written these books, a co-author and myself. And the fourth book in our series is actually on pet loss. Mm-hmm. Because what we are hearing from so many people, and myself included, our pets become like family members, and they play a significant role in our life when we grieve, and just as we're doing life in the joys and mm-hmm. in the hard times. So pets have become really, really important. It wasn't the book that we thought we were going to write. We started with loss of a partner because my co-author lost her husband. Mm-hmm. And my own loss story is loss of a child through miscarriage. And so our sixth book is loss of a child. So it's been a long life experience towards writing these books. Yeah, but pets, absolutely. As you say, it's there are people.
Mm-hmm. They
are. Yeah,
they definitely are. But I'm not a pet person, only because I'll be 45 this year, and my memory isn't what it used to be. My kids are alive because they can speak. They're like, Mom, we need to eat. We need dinner. You know what I mean? Feed us. So yeah. That's the only reason I don't do pets or plants. My memory's not that good. But I love that we have people such as yourself, Marian, that are there to help others. Why are you, I mean, you shared your journey, but why are you so passionate about helping others?
If you ask me kind of what my life mission was, mm-hmm. And I've learned this through 30 years in adoption work, supporting adoptive parents and adoptees and birth parents. And I've learned it through counseling hundreds of grieving people. I want to make grief normal again. It's not a disorder. It's not a dysfunction. It's a normal part of our life. And so I want to teach people how to grieve again. And I want to teach people how to support grieving people. Because if somebody has somebody in their life that is present to them when they're grieving and is just ready to walk with them, not fix them, not try to change them or speed up their grief or their loss, but if they're ready to walk with them in their journey, that person will find healing. And I have witnessed that over and over and over again. And the most courageous people I know are people who walk through their grief valley, but they had someone very special, important with them. So the books ended up being a way for me to share that passion, teach people how to grieve, literally put into words what it can feel like when you're grieving. And then the counter side of that, to show somebody how they might support or respond to somebody in that grief. So that's my passion. I want to teach people how to grieve again. And are we not living in a world of global grief right now with this pandemic?
A time of grief.
What's going on in politics? What's going on everywhere? And our isolation? We are a grieving globe right now. And we need to learn how to be present with each other. And we need to learn how to allow ourselves to grieve so that we can really find our way through this time.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Dr. Scott Guerin. Dr. Scott Guerin has two masters and a doctorate in human development, concentrating on spiritual development, and is the author of the Angel in Training series. He has been an adjunct professor in psychology at King University in New Jersey and works in the healthcare industry, specializing in medical education and health psychology. The driving force in his life has been a passion to understand God, spirit, and his relationship with them. As a result, his life experiences and educational path focus on spiritual development. Good morning, Dr. Scott. How are you?
Good morning. From the East Coast, great state of New Jersey.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us amongst all these lovely ladies.
Yes.
When we were speaking to Marian, what were your thoughts, Dr. Scott, on what Marian had to say?
The biggest thing, and even with Lisa's introduction, we're experiencing change. Certainly with the pandemic, the stay-at-home directives, and then certainly loss of loved ones. Not to be a downer, I lost both my parents to COVID last night.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And so we're all grieving, whether it's on different things, whether we're, on a lighter end, you can't go out, can't have friends over, to losing jobs, income, to losing loved ones. And change really starts, one change theory, as Marian would know, is the stages of grief, where you go through all the five stages of denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. May not be in that order, but we're all going through that in different ways. So that's one thing that popped out to me in listening to their intros.
Yes. So your focus is, and part of your passion is trying to understand God, spirit, and your relationship with him. Has that evolved, or what has come to you during this experience over the last year?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I started out, very passionate about God as a teenager, and I was all I was in the Protestant denominations throughout my 30s and 40s. And despite all that, unfortunately, not proud to say, my life fell apart, even though I was doing every possible thing with the church or organization I was involved with, to be closer to God, to understand, to get direction, to get answers. And my life fell apart to the point where I was thinking of ending my own life.
Oh, wow.
That didn't happen, obviously. But the next day, I said, all right, I want to figure this out. I'm going to start from zero. And that's when I went on a quest that kind of follows a trend, worldwide trend, and also in the U.S., of the rise of the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, meaning that when people are asked what their religious affiliation is, they check none. So my quest from that point on was, how can I follow and grow spiritually outside of organized religion? And certainly that feeds into, for me, and organized religion is great for many, many people, it works for them. For me, I chose ways to find peace and growth outside of that. In hard times, as in the last year, I revert to those things I learned, which really are, increasing practice of meditation and quietness of mind and all those things that come with it. But also investigating and other ways to navigate through this world without relying on a great power outside that may be male, maybe not, maybe female, maybe not, through laws of attraction, and then even through quantum physics with how we change things by observing them. So it was kind of, for me, the last year was pressed. I was pressed to say, okay, you figured out these things. This is where you want to go. Now let's put them to the test in hard times.
That makes perfect sense. And normally, typically, I wouldn't ask such a question, but because you volunteered the information in your bio, I thought I'd ask. Prior to COVID, what many people have seen or have expressed is there has been millennials or so many generations turning away from organized religion. But I've also had guests over the last year during COVID say there's been an uprising of people who are just seeking some greater understanding. Like, there has to be a meaning to all of this. For this didn't happen for so, you know, for no reason. So that's why I asked that question, Dr. Scott.
Yes, and so that the rise in spirituality in general, the rise in, the other word is mindfulness, you've probably been hearing it as a little more popular term, but it's basically meditation, quieting the mind, looking at life in a bigger perspective rather than what's gonna be happening in the next month or two. Deep hope is one term that has come up with, you know, not basing your happiness on an outcome that is may or may not happen next month, but basing your perspective on that our lives are a journey and that this may be a tough time. But in the end, we realize we are all the divine creatures. We are all connected and we all have incredible capabilities that really on our own ways, short circuit that with our doubts and our lower levels of self-worth, we keep that from us. So, you know, the Eagles term, you know, we always, we're chained, but we realize we don't have, that we have the key, you know, to move forward.
Absolutely. Dr. Scott, I am going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Judith Silverman. Judith is a creative arts therapist and former chair of the Department of Creative Arts Therapies, Concordia University, Montreal. Her recent book, The Story Within, Myth and Fairy Tale in Therapy, shares her own unique therapeutic approach that was created out of her clinical practice and being a professor to graduate students for over 20 years. She is an award-winning documentary filmmaker and has screened her films on television, cinemas, conferences, and universities. She received several federal grants to work on issues around suicide and interfaith arts dialogue. She leads workshops, trainings, creative rituals, and presentations internationally. Good morning, Judith. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's nice to have you. That was a mouthful for me today. I think it's Monday. It's so early. But again, it's that common theme, you know, the common theme that runs throughout the show. And you're a therapist. We talked to Marion about grief. We talked to Lisa about our pets and how they become our family. We talked to Dr. Scott about his search for something greater than himself. What are your thoughts, Judith? So far on the conversation.
Oh, okay. Well, I think the common theme is also the search for meaning. Mm-hmm. The last speaker, Scott Guerin, am I pronouncing that right? Dr. Yeah, Scott, yeah. Talked about a quest. And I feel like that's so essential for our health and well-being, is that we have a personal sense of meaning making. For me, I'm a creative arts therapist, so I'm a big believer in the arts. And I feel that creativity is as essential for our health as good food and exercise, because we're all creative. Sadly, sometimes during our childhood, that can get suppressed in schools. We can feel like we're not creative, but it's an innate response when we look at children, right? Their play is creative. So that creative impulse is very natural to us. And I feel like it's very healing, because it allows us to express what's inside of us and can feel overwhelming into an outside form. And then it's less overwhelming and we can work with it. So that's been my work for the last 25 years. I've worked in hospitals and clinics, and I found that when people work creatively, it allows them to discover their own resilience and strength. And so my book, The Story Within Myth and Fairy Tale in Therapy, was based on my clinical work in hospitals, working with clients that found it very difficult to access their own feelings and were experiencing trauma. Mm-hmm. And trauma can be really difficult to access and very difficult to verbalize. But sometimes it can be expressed through a creative medium. And that's gateway, the beginning to the healing process. And I was also struck by what Marion Boyd said about grief, because my last film was about suicide.
Oh, wow.
The hidden face of suicide. And I worked with survivors, people that were left behind. And they made masks, mm-hmm. because all of them talked about how they felt like they had to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. And no one knew what was behind the mask. And when they, when I showed the film, which is, I'm grateful it's been shown all over the world, people in the audience stand up and tell their stories about suicide that they've never told before, because the film gave them permission. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the common theme here too is about giving permission.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Giving permission to be vulnerable, giving permission to say what our feelings are, and especially right now in the world, we need that, because we're all going through grief. We're all going through loss and upheaval. And I do tend to be an optimist, so I'm hopeful that this upheaval is a catalyst for transformation and change.
Yes, absolutely. So we have a comment for you, Judith, from the audience. Brenda Cohen says, "You are so correct. Those who don't create do purchase creative pieces." As a greeting card designer, she has found that her handcrafted greeting cards has become a ministry for others. They make the recipients feel good. She says, what a blessing you are. What a blessing all of the guests are today. Now, Judith, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Carolyn Tapp McDougall. Carolyn is the publisher of Caregiver Solutions Magazine, a Canadian publication dedicated to the wellness of seniors, their caregivers, and their families. The author has a background in healthcare communications and extensive editorial experience in the areas of health, wellness, and disability as the managing editor of a number of Canadian magazines. She is also a respected speaker at conferences and events and is on the board of directors of the Canadian Abilities Foundation. And I would say she fits right in today. Good morning, Carolyn. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you for joining us. The panel, everything is just going together. What are your thoughts so far on the conversation?
Well, I mean, my audience is, I have a very large audience across Canada and in other parts of the world. And, you know, we're very concerned, obviously, with helping people to cope and manage through difficult times. And as, you know, other people have said, everybody's journey is different, but really, it's a matter of finding your own peace, your own way of dealing with what's going on. And I mean, we're the COVID and the things that are happening right now are kind of the negative icing on the cake. But for caregivers, they have been going through this for often 3 to 5 years in terms of an aging parent, or some families are dealing with someone, you know, right the way through their life journey. So, yeah, it's resilience, it's tenacity, and the work that we do tries to give people the content and the support and the connections to people who've written books, like a lot of our panelists today, and, you know, to the areas where they can get help and new ideas, creative ideas, and work through those journeys. So it's much more positive for them and supportive.
Were you a caregiver? Why are you so passionate?
I was. My father lived with ALS, and my mom had a stroke, and for 11 years I cared for her, and her stroke was pretty serious. And I have a daughter who lives with epilepsy, who's giving birth next week or the week after. So she's
a lot of babies coming.
I have another one upstairs. So if you hear yelling, that's what it is. Yes, I was. And I think the Canadian Abilities Foundation and the program Canada Cares was launched as a result of my own caregiving experience and the journeys that we've done. So yeah, very, very personal. And, you know, it's a challenge for people right now, because if they're caring for others, as well as themselves, and sometimes those others are with them in their home, and sometimes it's long distance. And so it's taking a lot of creativity, a lot of patience, a lot of support.
Yes, and it's also an adjustment on both sides, because sometimes the person who needs the care is used to being independent. One of my dear friends, I always talk about Mrs. Martin. I talked to her this morning. She's 99 years old, and this is the first time when she actually has someone living with her, and she's up making her oatmeal and making breakfast. And I'm like, Mrs. Martin, I thought you had someone living with you. She was like, yeah, but this is my exercise. And she's just so energetic at 99.
Yeah, and that's brilliant. And you know, there are a number of people that can do that. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got people who, you know, have lost loved ones, and they're still caring for, you know, someone else in the family. So it's very complicated, and it's very complex, because it's task related, as well as sort of emotional support that's needed. So you've got the balance on both sides. And a lot of caregivers, our statistics in Canada, you're 45 years old, it's women, 45 years old. So you can imagine they're still raising children, they're still working or trying to have careers, and yet they've got all these sort of additional things from an, you know, a special needs child, or from an aging parent or sister, or it's the whole spectrum.
Absolutely. I was reading an article the other day when it said the majority, obviously we all know that, but it was like 99% of people who were laid off or unemployment were the women. You know, during COVID, the women have been affected the most. So I want to come back to you, Carolyn, but I want to go back to Judith real quick, because one of the things that I've seen and we've discussed is that the social aspect of the pandemic for children, they're at home, they're not getting their same social needs met. Have you seen in your experience they need more of a creative outlet?
Absolutely.
I think that it's really helpful for the children, and it's really helpful for the families, because we're all under so much stress that if we do something that's creative as a family together, it takes us out of that stress mode, and it's life-giving, and it gives us a sense of resilience. So I think that especially for children, because they learn through creative play. So right now they're not getting that social interaction. The other thing that I think that can happen is actually creative interaction online with friends. And that is starting to happen. And I've been leading different groups doing creative work online. It's definitely different than in person, but you can share your art, you can share your movement, you can tell stories together. And I think it's essential that we have that creative interaction.
Absolutely. What have you seen, Marion, as the difference as far as your grief conversations during this time frame? People are locked up. They need more creativity. They need more people to talk to. And sometimes they feel guilty needing to have that conversation with someone, but it's a necessity now. Or is that your experience?
Absolutely. people are lost. We don't have access to our normal rituals, our normal routines that we say, okay, this is what we do when somebody passes away. My sister-in-law just passed away.
Oh, sorry.
And we couldn't go and visit my brother. We couldn't go and have visitation. We couldn't do all of those things. So it is really finding those different ways, those creative ways, and going back to what is the peace? What did those rituals give us that we can somehow find another way to express? So my husband and I made a full turkey dinner, took extras, took it up to my brother. We sat in the driveway in -1 degree weather with my 95-year-old father. We're all bundled up in blankets, 12 feet from each other. And we shared memories, because memories and stories are incredibly important. And one of the things that what I really hope people will hear, one thing is that difference between feeling a feeling and expressing the feeling. And feeling the feeling, like feeling grief, is one thing, but finding a way to express is actually how we will find our movement in healing. So when you talk about those creative ways, or we, as you said, some people don't know how to put it in words. So we gave people words in our books. This is what it can feel like when you're grieving, and they go, oh, those are the words I couldn't find. We need to find ways to find what's inside and let it out. Express it creatively, new ways, find the peace that we need, the connection. How can I connect if I can't do it in person? Can I sit in a driveway? Can I do Zoom? Can we bake together over Zoom? We did that as a family over Christmas. What are the pieces I need, and how can I still get that? And how can I express what's happening on my insides?
That was beautiful. Dr. Scott, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, what comes to mind, and I've been talking about this a little bit, is the idea of role strain, right? So for decades in a family, everybody gets up in the morning and they go to school, go to work, go to errands, whatever they do. And then now, bang, you know, stay at home. So there's this stress that comes up because, you know, you're used to going, you know, someone may be used to going to work. Now they have to balance that between doing laundry and maybe helping their children with schoolwork, or taking the pets out for a walk, and it becomes unattainable, you know, and the stress levels raise. So the one way to address that is role compartmentalization, where you kind of assign different things, different tasks to people, even like children, you know, give them a desk in a room and say, this is your space to do your schoolwork and during these times, and there's no social media, you know, whatever it may be. But kind of dividing and conquering in that way, it can help relieve that stress. And then certainly for me to say, I suggest that we have to take even more, put more effort into change in our lives. Like, okay, maybe you didn't have a regular meditation time during your day, but maybe not, or maybe it was on the way to work or at work, you know, when I can't do that. So now you have to force the time and let everybody know, like, okay, this is my hour. I'm going to be in my room, you know, that type of thing. So we're going to have to put more effort into addressing how change impacts us during these times.
Yes, I can absolutely imagine. Leeson, you want to say something?
Yeah, COVID has brought families together as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things normally wouldn't do. I mean, half the time we're so busy running to work and you know, running errands and doing this and doing that, you know, we don't have time to play with the kids. We don't have time to you know, be creative in figuring out ideas and ways to be with these children or any family member for that matter. So in a way, you know, it's just, I think it's just kind of redirected how we deal with life. And in a way, it's been a good thing in that it has brought family a little bit more together. I'm just a little bit more worried about, you know, the whole COVID thing and, you know, if there's gonna be PTSD, you know, which I'm sure that there will be, because this has been a traumatic experience. And I think, you know, and PTSD happens in many, many forms. I mean, I went through it when I lost a lot of money, you know, and, you know, so it does, it happens in different forms. And I didn't know it until I saw a counselor 5 years later. And she said, well, you're going through PTSD. I was like, really? oh, okay. You know, that helped kind of solve the problem and it made sense. But I think a lot of people are going to be going through that after this COVID is over with. And I think it's going to be really, really hard on the kids when people go change back to going to work. All of a sudden, the kids are going to miss their family again.
And Lisa, you know this, our pets are going to wonder what the heck happened.
Where'd they go?
I'm not getting my 5 walks a day and no one's in the house.
Yes. So we all have to adjust. I mean, there's a blessing in every curse. Absolutely. I saw that with my family. My brother lives in Australia and he's been in Australia since at least 2003. So we would talk often. But now during COVID, we have a scheduled weekly call where we just talk and we catch up. And the first, it was really awkward, like, what do we talk about? Like, what's the meeting agenda? We didn't have one. But now it's like, we can't wait to talk. And we wind up just calling each other even more than that scheduled weekly meeting. So it's been really great in that aspect. And just connecting with family that I hadn't talked to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people. Like this Zoom, people are connecting with people they would never connect with before. You know, because it's easy. I mean, we don't have to schedule an event at a convention. We don't have to schedule a lecture. We don't have to, do all the networking we used to have to do. All we have to do is click a couple of buttons and we've just met a whole new group of people, on a more real level.
That's why the world, which is so cool, right? Like, yeah. I would never have met Sharif. I would never met any of you. And yet here we are. And I'm amazed at some of the common themes that we're talking about. And can I go back to the PTSD piece that you brought up too? Because one of the things, and I studied with Dr. Alan Wolfelt, Center of Loss and Life Transition out of Colorado. And one of the things that he talks about is PTSD, but he asks, can we take the D out of it? It's not a disorder. Mm. We're responding in a natural way to a traumatic, stressful event. And then we talk about what is it that we need to do to find our way in the moment. And again, it's back to a lot of PTS has a lot of grief in it. There are always losses. We've lost vulnerability. We've lost money. We've lost careers. We've lost people. What is the loss? And can we allow ourselves to go into the loss if we have that good companion or a professional support person to help us deal with the grief of the trauma of the loss, and it'll begin to soften the edges of the PTS. That I don't think a lot of people really think about is that when you start thinking about post-traumatic stress disorder, there's a lot of loss and grief and transition and change. And I like Dr. Scott's word of change. Yes, any change is going to bring some loss to it. Even I talked to young women getting married and they said to me, I should be so happy. I'm getting married. I'm marrying the love of my life, but I feel sad. I said, what's your loss as you get married? Well, I loved being single. I loved being this. And so even though it was a good thing that was happening, that change, that shift in who they were was actually bringing a little side grief. And you know what? They can coexist. They don't have to erase each other out. So it's just something that I have found really helpful in working and chatting with people and talking with people.
Absolutely. Carolyn, your thoughts?
Well, I wanted to ask about grief, actually, as far as guilt as well, and how that fits together. Because I think one of the things we see in a lot of family caregivers is because they're juggling, first of all, self-care is not necessarily a priority for them. But then when they take that time, and I'm seeing that even with my daughter, who's a new mom, you know, she feels guilty if she goes off and does something because the baby isn't getting, 100%. So how do you deal with that guilt in the middle of sort of all of these things? And even with COVID, some people are feeling guilty because they brought it home to the family potentially or in their workplace. So can we talk about that for a minute?
One of the things that we talked about is the difference between guilt and regret.
Okay.
Guilt has an intention of malintent. Regret never has an intention of malintent. And so sometimes you might end up making a decision that you feel is in the best interest and it didn't go right. And you say, oh my gosh, I'm so guilty. Well, you know, you're not really guilty. You meant good and you meant for it to be good. And even if you take time for yourself, I regret the fact that, you know, I can't be 100% energy, super energized bunny all the time. I regret that because if I could be, then man, I could meet everybody's needs. But right. I'm not. My real story is that I also need my bucket filled up if I'm going to pour out to other people. And so that difference that I go to the core of the intent. Your intent is to care for your parent the best you can. And then the best way you can do that is to literally keep filling your bucket so that you've literally got something to give back to them. And no, you can't be 100%. It'll never work. Nobody can do that. It's an unrealistic expectation. But go to their heart, go to their intent, go to their care. And at the core is their love and their compassion and their care for their person. And that is a gift that they have, but that they need to keep filling up, as you say, in self-care. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That's brilliant.
And Marion, would self-forgiveness come into that?
You know, oh, absolutely.
Right? I mean, that's
absolutely, because you have to, and that we're less able to forgive ourselves sometimes than we are others, because we can go inside our little head and go, oh my gosh, I thought this, I thought that. Yeah, well, okay, you thought it. But self-care goes, you know what? I did that. Maybe I would do it different if I did it again. And I've learned, and I'm going to be gracious to myself now and forgive myself. If I had known what I know now, I might've done different. My intent, go back to your heart and your intent. And that is where self-forgiveness can
it can take a long time though, to self-forgive.
What's that?
I said, it can take a long time to self-forgive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
First, you have to recognize that you need to.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. You had a comment?
Yeah, I just to follow up, I also think there's this real striving for perfection.
Yeah.
And that really feeds into this sense of guilt, because we're not living up to this ideal of what we should be. Right. And constantly getting that right from the media, from what we read. I know when I worked in the hospital, I worked a lot with eating disorders.
Right.
Anorexia nervosa. I worked with a young girl who was hooked up to a heart monitor. She was 15 and weighed 65 pounds.
Oh, wow.
She was really at risk of dying. And I worked with her actually with myth and fairy tale and creativity, because nothing else was working. And she could identify with a character and slowly recognize a sense that life didn't have to be perfect, that there were obstacles, that it was a journey. But her ideal of being perfect was really killing her.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And social media does not help in that area either. I mean, because kids can be mean to each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the perfect people seem to take over social media or make these kids feel like they need to be perfect. I mean, when my daughter was in middle school, I mean, there were kids trying to commit suicide because they weren't perfect. And it was terrible. And we lived in a really good neighborhood in Orange County, California. And so this was happening a lot. Mm-hmm. And it just was mind-boggling.
And the increase right now of suicide amongst younger people, like from ages 10 to 14, is phenomenal. And it's really scary. And a lot of it is, as you say, because of social media.
Because
also the aspect that has changed is when we were younger, you may have been bullied at school, but you could go home and you can get away from it. You know, now, because they are bullied at school, they also may be bullied on social media. So it's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week thing, and they get other people to gang up on them and bully everyone. So it's a lot that we're dealing with. But I want to go back to something that you touched on earlier as far as the caregivers. I have a friend right now who is dealing with a situation where she's in her 40s, late 40s, and she's her caregiver for her mother, and her mother is very sick, her mother is very ill, and her mother has been living with her during COVID, but she never raised her. Her mother was never there. You know, she didn't go up for adoption, but she wound up living with different family members. And now that her mother is sick, she is literally forced to take care of her mother. And there's a resentment there. And when we talk about, I had to tell her, I was like, you know what? You resent your mother to a certain extent. You resent the fact that you have to take care of your mother because that's what the good daughter does. That's what you're supposed to do. And for years, your mother was not even a part of your life. So I would love for someone, I don't know, Carolyn, to respond to that.
Well, that's very common, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And also in the financial area as well, where there's a lot of times when the kids are expected to pay for things, you know, after a long journey of perhaps not a great relationship. So, of course, I'm not a therapist and we have other people on the panel that are, but I think it's a huge concern and it brings up all that guilt and resentment and all those things. And again, you have to go back to the self-care. You have to say, what is your intent? What are you able to do? And sometimes you have to say no, or you have to put limits, you know, and there are other options. And it's hard because, again, the finances and all of the external things. And I think there's bullying sometimes that happens within families as well, where someone is expected to care and it's not really their choice. And so they end up in that dilemma as well. And I appreciate some comments from our therapist to say, you know, what do you think about the situation and how do people handle that? Because it's common.
Yeah, I think a big thing that trips people up, including myself, is the idea that you've got to be in a good place in order for you to care for others in the best way. You know, if you're struggling, if you're dealing with resentment or whatever, it's going to come through when you're interacting with the parent or the friend or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it speaks to self-care and it almost seems selfish, but it really isn't. It's to make sure you monitor that you do the things you can do to get to a good place, and then you can be the best for others.
Well, your friend Sharifa is very, very fortunate that you're in her life, because that's what she needs. She needs somebody that's going to give her perspective, that's going to support her, that's there for her, that's going to understand her, that gets the story and goes, yeah, this is hard. Mm-hmm. And wow, you are rising above hard. You're like a champion in a way, right? Because this is hard. And she needs a spot to be able to talk about the grief of the fact that she did not have the mother that she wanted to have all her life. And yet here she is. I mean, wow. And what, like Dr. Scott is saying, finding those ways to self-care is going to be huge. And one of the most important things she'll have is somebody like you in her life. And you are a gift to her right now in a way that you may not even know it, but you are making a difference as she cares for her mom. You are caring for her. And that's huge. And so she needs a network of people that will care for her in a very, very challenging and hard and stressful situation.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that because it was no judgment, but I just noticed, you know, you're resenting. There's some resentment there, you know? Yeah. So we had that conversation. Yeah. I want to go back over to Lisa real quick. When we were talking about social media, it's not only children who, you know, are affected by social media. I think the world right now is being affected because we see so much, you know, going on in the world. What do you do for self-care for yourself, Lisa?
Yoga. And I'll tell you, and one of the things, you know, that pulled me out of my horrible state of mind from, you know, losing all that money was I started going to the Law of Attraction meetings. Mm-hmm. And I loved them, and everything started changing. And a lot of it was because I started feeling more confident. I realized, you know, that PTS, no D, was not my friend.
Yes.
And so I started doing yoga, meditating, and opening up a little bit and just kind of forgiving myself. So that's what I do. But I'm a workaholic, and so I need that time. And I do a lot of dog walking. In fact, I had a 3 o'clock in the morning wake up call today.
I think it's easier to be a workaholic when you work virtually, though. It kind of, that's one of the benefits.
Yeah,
Yeah, you know, it really hasn't changed too much for me other than I don't get to see my friends, you know, or I don't have to network that much. Well, I do, but it's different. So, yeah. I'm still in front of a computer no matter where I am.
I know the feeling. I know that feeling. Will, you did. What do you do for self-care?
Well, I meditate and I do yoga and I walk with friends. That's been a real lifesaver. And I also do creative work because I find that having a creative practice just keeps me constantly in a feedback loop with tuning into what I'm feeling, being able to express it so it doesn't become overwhelming. And then I look at it and sometimes I'm surprised, oh, this is what I'm feeling. And just also to respond to what Caroline was talking about, resentment, I've found a way that I can deal with that and other people I've worked with is to create something about it. Because the nice thing about an art form is that it can express complex feelings. So you could make a collage where you're expressing a feeling of resentment on it, and also perhaps love or loss that this mother wasn't the kind of mother you wanted. And you can have it all on one form. It could be something simple like a collage. It's just a recommendation. It might be helpful because when those feelings are inside and we don't know what they are, they're very hard to work with and they can be overwhelming. So just having an avenue and something simple like a collage can be really helpful.
And like I do a lot of, advertising for Paw Purity, my company that does the pet products. And I usually have a designer design, you know, the artwork and stuff, but I did teach advertising over at UNLV. So I thought, okay, I'm going to put my creativeness, which I don't consider myself very creative. but there are programs out there like Canva, where you can create some really cool stuff and you're going, wow, did I do that? And it's really an easy program to learn. It's, you know, like $12 a month, so anybody can do it, but it's fun. Mm-hmm. And it is therapeutic. It's like, ooh, you feel good about yourself after you've done something creative like that. So, but there are programs like that. So they don't
have to. I love Canva.
Yeah, Canva's fun.
I love playing with Canva. I prefer playing on Fiverr, though. I have all my graphic designers design whatever I dream up at 3 a.m. By 5 a.m., I have a graphic design with my new idea. Now, we are coming down. I've enjoyed this show immensely. And I'm sure it helps some people as well. But we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Judith.
Yeah. well, I guess what I want people to know is that this is a very difficult time, and that we have the power to heal within us. And that I believe that creativity is a real essential tool that we each have and we can utilize at this time. And I also feel like the idea of myth and fairy tale, which is something that many of us had as children, and the idea of stories, that if we identify with a character, we don't feel so alone. And a character goes through a quest and goes through obstacles and faces them and finds meaning through this quest. And I feel like that's what we need right now, because we need to find meaning through this process that we're all going through. And I guess I just wish everybody to let go of the idea of being perfect and perfections. It doesn't exist. And that our vulnerability and sharing our vulnerability with each other is a strength. And that's what's going to get us through this.
Amen. I love it. Dr. Scott, follow that one.
tough. The content that I developed in the Angel in Training series is just my story and what I've learned over decades of passionately trying to understand God, religion, myself, how to interrelate. And so for those people who are seekers, who are wondering about how to deepen their faith, especially outside of organized religion, I can check out my books and resources on at angelintraining.org. And you can contact me through that. But basically, what I've learned in my journey, I pass on for people to take, leave, learn from, and continue your growth to understand yourself.
I want to be an angel in training. Will I get there one day? One day I'll graduate, be an angel?
You already are. That's the key. You already are.
Thank you. I love that. Carolyn.
I dub you.
I like that.
I guess I just want to ensure that everybody, of course, is taking care of themselves and understanding how important that is. And I guess within my book and my magazines, I'd like people to realize that there are some very practical solutions and things that you can do to make your life easier or smoother or your journey much more fulfilling, because these are difficult times, but there's also a lot of joy. And I think that's the thing sometimes that we're missing in the middle of that social media and all those negative pushes, to just take a few minutes and find joy in those memories, in what you're able to do for your loved one and what you're able to do for yourself. And so, you know, that's what I wish for people. And it's only a few minutes to take and do that. And it can change your whole day or your whole focus on things.
I like when you did that. That was like from Bewitched. I used to watch that show. It was like it changes. I wish I could do my nose like she did, but I got the moment. I like that.
I talk with my hands.
I don't do, as you know what I mean? That's good. Lisa, what do you have for us?
Well, mine's a little bit different because it has to do with pets, and pets are a family. Pets are important. And I think that they keep everybody whole, make you, I mean, you're a caregiver, you know, you get care back, you get love back. And so it's really important. That's why I'm so passionate about them, is taking care of them. And so I'm going to hold something up here. This is my logo. I mean, it was kind of very, very hard to start this business because, you know, everybody was going for the containers because for new hand sanitizers and all that stuff. But I think it's really, really important to take care of your pet the right way. And if you look at every ingredient, I want everybody to look at the ingredients that they're putting on their dogs and their cats, and go to my website. You'll see a few of them listed there, and what it can and can't do and the harm it can do. And that's why every single ingredient in our, like we have 37 plants in a shampoo, every single one of them work to do something that's good for your pet's skin. Because remember, that's their biggest organ. So whatever you put on it, you know, matters. So yeah, just take care of your animals.
Yes, I thought that was like, take care of your animals and each other. That's like a famous closing line. I love it. Marianne, go ahead and take us out.
Well, I know I'm talking to people who are grieving, and I know I'm talking to people who are caring for people who are grieving. And it's hard. It's hard work. You know what? Grief is that gift that we have as humans that helps us transition from incredible loss into life and hope again. I've seen it over and over and over again. And I have hope for you. And I have hope for all of us. I have hope globally that we will be able to find our way as we are vulnerable, as we find creative ways to express ourselves, as we care for ourselves, as we care for each other, as we find therapeutic things like pets to help us, we will find our way. There is hope. We can do this. And in our books, it's just one of the ways. This one is for teens. They all are, we've got one for teens, loss of a parent, loss of a partner. And in the spring, three more books are coming out, loss of a pet, loss of a sibling and friend, and loss of a child. We give you words. We give you a glimpse into what it feels like to feel that loss and how you're going to find your way and a way to help each other. So I honor your journey. Thank you.
Thank you. That was so beautiful. I want to thank you all for being guests on this morning's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. I definitely appreciate your support. I appreciate you tuning in to watch the show, but please don't just watch the show. Don't just share the show. Support our guests. visit their websites, pick up a couple of copies of their book, follow them on social media, send them a message, reach out to them. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at AskSharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone stay safe and be blessed. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.